rockzone.com.
Now, TalkZone presents the Cyber Advisor. This is the show that looks at the people and events that move the financial markets and shape our economy. Here's your host for the Cyber Advisor, David Revelle.
You know, there were two important speeches this week. One was seen by millions around the nation. It talked about healthcare. And one was only viewed by a couple of hundred people in the audience, and it was about living healthcare. Steve Jobs, the legendary founder of Apple Computer, returned to the stage 5 months after a liver transplant that saved his life. He said, "I'm vertical. I'm back at Apple and loving every day of it." He also declared, "I'm getting to work with our incredibly talented team to come up with some great new products for you all in the future." That's what built this economy, you see. That's what built this country. Hardworking people overcoming great, great odds to build great new products for you all in the future. Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to the September 11th edition of the Cyber Advisor. This is where we celebrate the entrepreneurs and investors who make this economy and this country work. I'm your host, Dave Revelle, and if you'd like to join us on the show, our lines are open. You can dial toll-free at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT, 888-463-6748, or reach me anytime on my email. It's dave@thecyberadvisor.com. Well, there's lots to talk about today. We'll hear from Timothy Geithner's testimony. He's the Secretary of the Treasury and was testifying before the Congress Oversight Committee on the economic recovery, and he explains that the financial sector that it lies ahead will be smaller but stronger. And that may be the problem here, in that as the financial sector gets smaller, does that mean also our economy is getting smaller? In the next part, Ilyen Mayhov of INSED, the business university in Paris, discusses how to deal with toxic assets. He believes, and we agree, that the best way is to unload those assets on a bad bank created just for that purpose, just like we did during the RTC crisis, you may remember, in the 1980s, a proven plan, one that we have already worked through, one that has already worked out. Now, in the second segment of the show, we're going to talk about derivatives. And I know that can be a difficult topic for everyone, hard to understand and difficult to know just where they're going. We're going to break it down into three areas of derivatives. One area is that we'll talk to legal scholar Michael Greenberger, and he gives an excellent explanation of just what derivatives are and how they sunk this financial system. Next, we'll bring you up to date with Julian Lenoble from Asian Pacific Clearing, and he'll discuss efforts to standardize derivatives to make these investment vehicles act and report just like any other securities. What you may not have known is that derivatives are not traded on any exchange generally. It's a free-for-all market with everyone paying everyone else and what they call counterparty risk, that is the risk of the other person not paying, being very, very high. Finally, William Bartman, the former head of commercial finance services, discusses the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are at the epicenter of this whole problem. The derivatives grew off of the mortgages that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac distributed out for the marketplace. And they become the underlying collateral for most of the derivatives that gave us the real headache and the real problem in the financial meltdown. And finally, in the third part of the show, we have a great story about New Fairfield, Connecticut. Now, New Fairfield is a small town that understands truly how to budget. In this time, right now, in this difficult economy, they've managed to not only avoid financial shortfalls, but actually budget to a surplus. On top of that, they've been able to get their bonds a AAA rating. And as you know, the higher your rating, the lower your interest rate. they estimate that in the bonds that they're going to be floating shortly for a new school, they'll save about $750,000 in interest alone over the lifetime of their bond issuance, just because they understand that as revenue came down, they had to budget also their own budget down lower too. A unique story. I think you'll look forward to hearing it. Well, on Thursday, yesterday, Timothy Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury, was testifying before the Congressional Oversight Committee on the government financial rescue effort. And in his opening remarks, Timothy Geithner was asked how he saw the economy recovering. And here's what he had to say.
Last September, of course, we faced the risk of catastrophic financial failure and the risk of a Great Depression. And today, I believe because of comprehensive policy actions put in place since then, we are back from the edge of the abyss. The consensus among private forecasters now is that the U.S. economy is now growing again. The financial system is showing very important signs of repair. Cost of credit has fallen dramatically, not just for homeowners, for households, but for businesses as well. Because of these signs of early progress, we are now in a position to start to adjust our strategy, moving from crisis response, from the emergency response to recovery, from rescuing the economy to repairing and rebuilding the financial system to repairing and rebuilding the foundations for future growth. And as we enter this new phase, we have to begin winding down in programs that are no longer necessary, and that by design do not need, are less needed, less important as the economy recovers.
Two important points that Secretary Geithner makes here. Point number one is, are you noticing how the language is starker and starker on exactly what the economic catastrophe was ahead of us back a year ago? He calls it, Timothy Geithner calls it an economic abyss, certainly a difficult time. The solution to that abyss, and this is all part of the exit strategy, but one of the solving of the of getting us in the crisis was available credit and the cost of credit. Now the Treasury and the Fed have control essentially short-term interest rates, so the cost of credit, it should be understood, will come down. We have been able to bring the cost of credit down, but that's not the question. The real question ought to be, what's the availability of credit? Is the average small businessman, the average corporation now able to get access to the credit markets? That will become the real measure of how well we're able to get out of this economic crisis. If credit is freely available and free-flowing, then small businesses, entrepreneurs and so on will have access to the credit markets and the economy will start bringing itself back. It's an open question in my mind whether there is free access to credit availability. We know credit cost is low, but is there credit availability? That's the real concern, and a concern not addressed by Timothy Geithner here. Timothy goes on to say, to kind of describe the position of the financial industry, the financial system in the country. And here's what he had to say then.
There's a lot of concern that as things have improved, that we're going to let the market, the financial world, go back to the conditions that it enjoyed before the crisis, and we're not going to let that happen. We've seen dramatic restructuring in our financial system already. If you look at the list of the top 20 firms in the country 2 years ago, a substantial fraction of those firms no longer exist today as independent entities. The financial system is going to be smaller, but it's going to be stronger, and that's a fundamentally healthy, desirable thing for our economy. But for that to happen, the Congress of the United States need to come join with us in passing comprehensive financial reform so we have much stronger rules of the road and constraints in place to prevent this from ever happening again.
Dramatic restructuring of the financial system. Of the top 20 firms in existence last year, many are not in existence now. And we know the list. The list is fairly extensive and begins with Lehman Brothers, incidentally, but Bear Stearns, Merrill Lynch, all of those have been taken over by other entities. And this gets to the heart of the problem. If you want to see the economy come back and the financial area strengthen, you have to see someone step up and take over from those people who've fallen by the wayside. Smaller in size does not necessarily bring stronger in capability, as Secretary Geithner has indicated. In fact, quite the opposite. And herein lies the problem of the approach that we are taking in this country right now. As regulation is increased, as capital requirements are increased, you are seeing a smaller financial services industry, a smaller banking industry, fewer and fewer people able to give the credit needed to get the economy up and running and going. This is the largest concern that we have as we look forward to that. Well, let's go and take a look and see what happened on Wall Street this week as we return from Labor Day. Now, Monday was the holiday. But the Wall Street Journal was reporting that much of Wall Street was hoping for increased volume as we came back from summer. The Wall Street Journal reported the tension in the market was running high and has been for months. Stocks are up around 9% from late May and more than 40% from March when they hit their lowest point in 12 years. The summer rally was propelled by a better-than-expected second quarter reporting season and incremental improvements in economic data. But the stock market, the surge in the stock market lately also coincided with extremely light volume. In normal markets, you can assume September will not be a good month, but you can throw all that sense of normalcy out after 2008, said Kevin Mann. He's the chief investment officer for Hennen & Walsh. September will reintroduce volume, he said, And I'm interested to see if it will be on the short side volume or on the long side volume, meaning will volume come in as the market declines or will volume come in as the market goes to steady higher? The market will likely need more positive earning reports from companies, more guidance above expectations, and more economic improvement, especially related to jobs, to stave off the correction everyone's fearing, he said. Anyway, on Tuesday, we saw an update with the Dow Industrials up about 56 points, the NASDAQ was up almost 19 points, and the Standard & Poor's up about 9 points. On that day, on the next day, on Wednesday, the Dow Industrials continued on the upside with the Dow up 50 points, NASDAQ up about 22, and the Standard & Poor's up almost 8. And at this time, gold started flirting with $1,000 an ounce. It closed on the COMEX at just $995.40. But as we look at trading today, it looks poised to finish well above 1,000, currently trading at about 1,004. Well, on Wednesday, the Beige Book came out, and stocks wobbled a bit. Traders read the Beige Book as rather depressing, said Robert Pavlik, chief market strategist at Bain Partners. Saying that the news in the report indicated a slowing rate of descent rather than an uptick in economic activity. Very important point. Slowing rate of descent, unfortunately, doesn't yet mean an uptick in economic activity. Other market watchers, such as Oppenheimer's Asset Management Chief Investment Strategy Brian Beltsky, said the market remains skittish to untrusting. Investors are acutely aware that we're into September now. It's a traditionally bleak month for equities. It's actually the worst month of all 12. September is the worst month for equities, so they have their eyes peeled for a sell-off. Belsky added that he's taking this week's market action with something of a grain of salt, as traders are very slow to return after the summer vacations. Well, we turn now to Ilan Mihov. He's professor of finance at INSED. INSED is the giant business school located in Paris. Mihov received his PhD from Princeton, and he is a macroeconomist. And he takes a general view of exactly how the economy is performing now. And when he was asked, what does he think the biggest risk to the recovery is. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I think that the main risk, in my view, is against someone reveling in the financial sector. I think that if the financial sector turns out to, you know, to stop the restarting of lending, if we see some more banks having problems, then that will be the worst case scenario. Because, you know, remember last year we've been talking about this recession, and the most dangerous thing about any recession, any depression around the world, is the collapse of the financial sector. Everything else, if we deal with the financial sector, everything else is relatively straightforward.
We can summarize Mihov's position fairly simply. Everything takes a backseat to the financial sector. So when Geithner says that we're going to have a smaller, leaner, but hopefully stronger financial sector, that's absolutely critical in Mihov's view of the thing. Another major bank failure, like Lehman Brothers, according to Mihov, would be an absolute disaster in this current economy. So that's the major risk. Now, they went on to ask, well, okay, a lot of the banks do have a great deal of toxic assets on their books, and exactly how should we handle that? I think he comes up with an excellent idea. He's not alone in this, but he's one of the most vociferous on this, and that's to simply follow the pattern of the Resolution Trust Corporation, the RTC, that was set up back in the 1980s to handle bad mortgages back then. Let's simply form a bad bank and put the bad assets in the bad bank. Here's Professor Mihov.
Right. So I think that toxic assets are indeed the heart of the problem. And I've said this many times, is that the cancer on the balance sheet of banks. There are two ways out of this. One is to wait and see that the markets recover and therefore some of these assets become less toxic. And indeed, in the past few months, that's exactly what has been happening. But this process will be quite slow. The second thing that one can do, and I've been advocating that this should be done, is to take the toxic assets off the balance sheets and try to create a bad bank, try to deal with them in a separate entity. And the reason that I've been advocating this is because right now, this $900 billion in cash sitting on balance sheets of commercial banks are sitting there exactly because banks are afraid. What if tomorrow some of my portfolio goes again down and therefore my depositors start withdrawing their money? My investors lose confidence. In order to prevent this kind of scenario that, you know, Lehman experienced, banks are hoarding cash. They're not lending, they're just sitting on tons of money. So I would advocate still that, you know, if you can take the toxic assets off the balance sheet, if you can deal them with a separate entity like people have done in other countries before, I think that will be the faster way to recovery.
That is exactly the point, and I think he's made it brilliantly here. There's $900 billion in banks currently. It's not the cost of credit, it's the availability of credit, and it's banks' concern that they either may A, have a run on the bank, or B, have higher capital requirements and thus not be able to lend out those funds. He's exactly right. He presents the picture, I think, correctly in when he says we have really two ways. We can either slowly grow ourselves out of this process, and as we'll see later in the show, that is a process that may be extremely long, or we can isolate, quarantine the toxic assets, and move forward with the process. Anyway, moving on Thursday, U.S. markets were also up 80, over 80 points on the Dow Industrials, the NASDAQ up about 23, and the Standard & Poor's up almost 11. Now, that marked 5 days in a row on the upside for the markets. The markets have not been up 6 days in a row since 2007, and unfortunately, in looking just about an hour left to go to the close on Friday, doesn't look like we'll make the record six in a row. In other news, gold prices, as we said earlier, continue to rise. Around 10 o'clock this morning, gold was up $13 to $1,010.40 on the COMEX, when later in the morning it peaked at $1,013.70 an ounce, currently around $1,004. December silver was up 24 cents to $16.91. Now, as one of the analysts, Jim Steele, over with HSBC said, It's the stronger oil price and also the push by the euro to new highs. The euro has peaked at $1.46. That's its strongest level since December. In October, crude oil has hit a high of $72.90, its strongest level since August 31. That triggered a lot of macro hedge fund buying, said Jim Steele. So that's a look, a real brief look at how the markets did and some of the other news for this week. It's time for a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more right after this.